Please be advised that the following material may not be suitable for all listeners. The host and the guests may discuss adult-oriented subjects and thematic elements.
It was dinner time for the family of monsters. Samantha had something on her mind. After a three-course meal, she finally found the courage to tell her monster parents what she felt inside. She said, "Mom and Dad, I want to be a human. Mom and Dad, I want to be a human being. Mom and Dad, I really, really want to be a..."
No way!
Her parents shouted very loudly, but this hadn't changed Samantha's mind. She thought, "I'll run away while everyone is sleeping to the monster of monsters at midnight."
Welcome to the Samantha Page Show. I'm your host, Samantha Page. You are listening to us on KXRW 99.9 FM, Vancouver, Washington. Today's show, I'm going to spend some time talking to the Marquis de Sade, who is a two-spirited drag performer. We're going to discuss Marquis de Sade's history in drag, and we'll also discuss what it was like growing up two-spirit in the Pacific Northwest. For those who are unfamiliar with the term, two-spirit is a gender identity or an identity primarily known and found within the indigenous communities or Native American communities here in the Americas. It's a rich and historical cultural identity that goes back, I want to say, thousands of years, but it's primarily defined by each nation. In the 1980s, there was an effort by an activist to take those separate tribal identities and to form them into one understandable or recognizable concept. And that name, Two-Spirit, was in connection with that effort. The term Two-Spirit has a relative recent origin, but it describes identities and roles that have existed in many indigenous cultures across North America for centuries. Long before European contact, there were what would become two-spirit individuals in the Americas. The modern term two-spirit was created in the 1990s at what I understand was an indigenous LGBTQ+ gathering in Winnipeg, Canada. It was chosen to be an English language term and to provide a shared identity across nations while still respecting the various differences. While the definitions vary, it generally refers to indigenous people who embody both masculine and feminine spirits, a cultural spiritual identity or role that's not just a gender identity or a sexuality. Today, Two-Spirit is part of a broader cultural movement, a cultural revitalization when it comes to indigenous peoples in the America, a language reclamation aspect, and an effort to heal from colonial trauma. So the term Two-Spirit, which often stands at the intersection of indigenous identity and gender diversity, as well as spiritual tradition, the identity itself is ancient. Though the term and its modern usage does arrive from the indigenous LGBTQ+ event in Winnipeg, Canada in 1990. So what we'll do now, because I'll be honest with you, I have very little firsthand experience or knowledge with regard to the two-spirit identity. So I was lucky enough to meet a drag performer who identifies as a two-spirit individual. They were kind enough to come into the studio here and talk with me a little bit about what that was like for them. And we'll get right to that in just a moment. But first, we're going to hear a message from one of our sponsors.
Call me, I'll tell you.
KXRW programming is made possible by partners like Buckley & Associates, attorneys at law, helping injured victims seek the justice they deserve for over 40 years. Licensed in Washington State, our diverse team speaks over 7 languages, making your rights more accessible and easier to understand. Learn more at buckleylaw.net. Buckley & Associates, we speak your language.
우리는 여러분의 언어를 구사합니다.
我们说你的语言.
Nosotros hablamos tu idioma.
중도의 nói ngôn ngữ của bạn.
KXRW is supported by The Columbian, which provides coverage of environmental, transportation, and housing issues of vital interest to the region and is made possible through its community-funded journalism project. Available at Columbian.com.
Welcome back to the Samantha Page Show here on KXRW 99.9 FM, Vancouver, Washington. We'll begin our conversation next with the Marquis de Sade. However, before I get into that, I do want to note that the music that I will be playing to bump us in and out of segments will all be from Two Spirit artists, all locatable on Apple Music or in Amazon. I'm sure you could probably stream them through Spotify or any other streaming services. The names and of the songs and the artists will be in the liner notes to this particular episode, and I hope that you check them out. They're all quite talented and quite amazing. So now, without ado, let's get into our interview with the Marquis de Sade. And I'm here with my guest, the Marquis de Sade. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. And but you also go by Sasha, is that?
Yes.
Okay.
I also have my other female drag name, too.
Oh, well, tell us, share us that.
My name is Valencia de Sade.
Valencia de Sade.
Yeah.
I've never seen you perform under that.
I was a leather when I was 20 years old, so
okay.
I have a leather title for the underage crowd.
Wow.
And they every year have the Rosebud Thorn pageant mm-hmm. and / leather and lace pageant, which is a pageant for people under 21 to have a drag title. So they have a competition every year and I am following that and I perform there. I also do horror drag or alt drag as a female.
Okay. I see. So an alt drag is a subcategory like camp drag or regular drag. It's just, it's an alternative category of drag.
Yes.
Okay. And that's the drag that you typically perform in as a drag king. Is that?
No, I do that as a drag queen.
As a drag queen.
Yeah.
Okay. So I've only seen you perform as Marquis de Sade.
Yeah.
I think where you, mm-hmm,
yeah.
You
I
were...
perform as a drag king 99% of the time now.
Okay.
I did drag as a queen for 10 years and needed a change.
Welcome to the show. First of all, it's a pleasure to have you. Thank you for agreeing
to
do this. I really appreciate it. It's very kind of you. I know that as a trans person, I spend a lot of time sort of defending who I am in my existence, my identity, trying to explain to people. I don't get to the just normal small talk. I have to first go through these layers of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And the goal of the show is to hopefully allow other people to learn about those layers.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I asked you to be on my show is, of course, is because you're native. Is that
yes.
right?
Yes. I'm a two-spirit drag entertainer.
Okay.
So the two-spirit term kind of is like considered like a third gender, or it falls in the whole umbrella as trans.
Right.
It's somebody who embodies both male and female spirit or gender fluidity. And they're also a person, especially in the Native community, that carries tradition, or they are part of, you know, teaching other people. It doesn't just have to do with sexuality at
sure.
all.
Okay. Yeah.
Because Natives are one of the few communities that I've encountered that embrace trans people.
Mm-hmm.
They're sacred people.
Wow.
A lot of tribes consider them medicine people. They're people that are protected. And they've been known in history for thousands of years.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, it's not anything new.
No.
Colonialism has wiped that, thinking it's something that just recently popped up, which is absolutely 1,000% not true.
Yeah. My understanding, and it's limited, of course, is that gender diversity or gender fluidity was not necessarily common, but certainly not uncommon in the Native tribes of North America.
Well, I mean, if they knew a baby, there's a whole joke, the whole story that I've heard is called the feather in the basket. When somebody has a baby, they put him, this is the joke, that they put him in a field and then they let them choose who they want to be. And if they choose the feather, that means they're going to be a warrior. That means they're going to go hunt and gather. That means they're whatever. If they choose a basket, then they're going to learn things that would normally be recognized as feminine.
Wow.
But
okay.
If a child in my culture or my family or anybody I've known, if the child is more prone to do one thing, they don't try to deter them like colonial, like white.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that sounds terrible. White heritage colonialism has taught you, oh, well, if that boy is being too girly, we need to get him to do more boy stuff. Natives don't do that. If boys want to play with dolls, they play with dolls.
Oh, that's wow. Okay.
You know, it's just like, you know, people making fun of them for having long hair. I think that part of the Indian children, Native children growing up with long hair, it removes the whole gender to begin with.
I never thought of it that way, but yeah,
I mean,
that makes sense.
If everybody has the same look,
right,
there's no pressure to be one thing or the other.
That's an interesting. Yeah, I've never really realized that.
Yeah, my brother had long hair. My nephew right now has long hair. They grew up with long hair. Mm-hmm. My brother didn't cut his hair actually until my father passed away as an homage to my father because he was in mourning.
Yeah.
Native kids, when you see them, they have problems in normal school sometimes for being picked on because, oh, you have long hair.
Yeah.
Why do you look like a girl?
Yeah.
We don't classify that as a trait of being feminine or not. It's just a human trait. It's a cultural heritage belonging of yours, your hair.
Yeah.
So
that's interesting. Yeah. And it makes a lot of sense in that context too, in a way, that, you know, the native cultures with that emphasis or at least that aspect of a lack of gender identification by outward expression.
But I mean, you know, like if you go to a powwow and you see kids and whatever, a lot of the cultural outfits are similar, but they're not the same. There's not necessarily gender identification until you get down to things like types of dancing or like feather placement. That sounds really weird, but where you wear feathers on certain places on your body represent certain things.
Okay.
So it's like a big, it's kind of like the hanky code for queer people. So right, you can say, oh, that person's married, that person's not married, that person's looking.
Ah.
It's something that's a signifying factor.
Really?
Feathers and feather placement or what they wear.
Mm-hmm.
But they also have now, especially they have events of powwows and whatever, where you can be you could be of one gender and dance in a category of the other gender.
Really?
Yeah. So I did that when I was 16.
Okay. Tell us about that.
I did the powwow circuit when I was 16 with my family, my extended family. I was the lead singer on a drum because my uncle, who did lead the drum, had short-term memory problems.
Oh.
Due to, which is historically known, lots of Native families have problems with addiction.
Yeah.
It's very common.
Mm-hmm.
Alcoholism is a killer, period. Drugs overtook lots of reservations. They have lots of problems. My uncle, he participated in what he could find was the cheapest type of stuff. So like, for example, lots of reservations have problems with things like spray paint.
Wow. Yeah. Huffing.
Inhalants.
Yeah. Huffing.
Because it was cheap. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it was cheaper than alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had short-term memory problems. So I was the lead singer of a drum group.
Okay. Okay.
And at a powwow we went to, they had a team dance competition. And my uncle asked me if I wanted to try to compete in it in his regalia at 16.
Okay.
So I was technically, I guess, culturally cross-dressing at 16. And now it's an actually like event. They have women perform as men and the other way around. Which is fantastic because it just proves that there's that line.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Powwows are intertribal, which means any tribe can participate.
I didn't know that.
So it's a place you can go where you can go dance, where you can hear drum groups who sing intertribal songs. So they're songs that anybody can sing.
Uh-huh.
They also sing songs that are primarily in their language or whatever tribe they are. But you can go to a powwow, hear a song that anybody can pick up, that anybody can sing, and that anyone can dance to.
Okay.
So that's what intertribal means. So it's not just of a specific tribe. Now, there are powwows that are like, you know, the Lakota Sioux, you know, on Rosebud. That reservation might have a specific powwow just for Lakota people.
Okay.
But it doesn't necessarily mean it's not open to the public.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Mm, that's interesting. So you and I, we didn't get into this at the beginning, and I apologize for that. I was going to ask you your pronouns, but because you perform in both drag king and drag queen personas, what pronouns do you rely on or would you express to a loved one and hope they follow?
My pronouns are she, they most of the time, but if I'm in male drag, I'll tell she, they, he, him.
It's a little gray area when you play different personas.
I have two drag personas. Yeah. I have a female and a male, so I answer to both of those. Mm-hmm, and then most people don't know what my first name is, which is hilarious.
Yeah,
so,
right.
I answer to about anything. Gender is a construct.
Okay.
To me, I think that there's so much of a blurred line, and there has been for so long for so many things that people do not recognize.
Yeah.
That are like, if you wanted to break it down to what's male and what's female, it's absolutely ridiculous.
It is.
Anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, ridiculous.
It, as the joke goes, if it were natural, you wouldn't need laws to enforce it. So,
no, I mean, it's true. So I think it's funny. One of my projects I did in high school, I did a thing about modern primitives. So like piercings and tattoos and significance of why they're important.
Yeah.
And how things that are body modifications. When people hear the word body modifications, yeah. they think like big gapped ears like my ears or tattoos or mm-hmm. something extreme. Mm-hmm. And the definition that falls in that is anything that alters your own human state as a person.
Uh-huh.
So wearing a belt. Wearing a belt is a body modification.
Glasses because it changes
the shape of your body. If you wear fake fingernails, mm-hmm. if you get a manicure, if you get a haircut,
yeah.
and people want to nitpick at specific like things, and it's funny to me, and I'm like, you know, the basic, most basic thing that you do. Who said mm-hmm. that was girly or boy or not? It's insane.
No, it doesn't make sense. That's weird.
No, you know. I mean, people would rather pick at stuff like that now than actual things that actually matter.
Right. Unfortunately, it's like you are listening to the Samantha Page Show here on KXRW 99.9 FM, Vancouver, Washington. This is my interview with Two-Spirit drag performer Marquita Saad, and. We will be right back after these messages from a couple of sponsors. Here and I'm designing. First comes genocide, then the screams and the silence. Indigenous north to south, we on the rising. Beauty like the sun and the moon on the horizon. I spit exquisite, the laws of physics defying. 500 years strong and we surviving. Indigenous north to south, we on the rising. Beauty like the sun and the moon on the horizon.
Discover our city's hidden gem, hiding right below the sidewalk. Underbar is a speakeasy-themed cocktail lounge located downtown Vancouver. As an LGBTQ-friendly and gay-owned space, it is a go-to destination for weekly events such as comedy, trivia, bingo, and open mic nights. Local artists are featured every first Friday of the month, and every fourth Sunday is Underbar's Underground Drag Brunch Show, 2 to 4 p.m. More information and location can be found at underbarvancouver.com. That's underbarvancouver.com.
La programación de KXRW es posible gracias a socios como Buckley and Associates. Abogados que ayudan a víctimas lesionados a obtener la justicia que merecen por más de 40 años. Con licencia en el estado de Washington. Su equipo diverso habla más de 7 idiomas, haciendo que tus derechos sean más accesibles y fáciles de entender. Conoce más en BuckleyLaw.net. Repito, BuckleyLaw.net. Buckley & Associates. Hablan tu idioma.
You are listening to the Samantha Page Show here on KXRW 99.9 FM, Vancouver, Washington. I'm in the middle of my conversation with Two-Spirit drag performer Marquita Saad, and I will get back to that shortly. Survival like an ancient messenger, running miles and miles, spending most of my time immersed in the wild. Did you grow up with the understanding of who you are as a queer person, or?
So it's funny. So when my mom... When my mom had me, she was so excited mm-hmm. because she was told she's having a girl.
Yeah.
She's absolutely ecstatic. She went out and bought like little frilly dresses this stuff, right? And the first thing I did when I was little, my mom said she was so mad, is that I went outside to my father who was working on a car and crawled underneath and was covered in oil.
Oh, wow.
And after that, she quit trying to force that on me. So okay. I wasn't forced to wear dresses. I wore dresses if I wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And outside of drag, I do dress more feminine 90% of the time. That's just because I like to.
Yeah.
But she never, I knew at a very young age that I don't believe necessarily any sexual, like, I don't think people should put themselves in a box for what they prefer sexually or even platonically.
Yeah.
Cause you could lose out on so many experiences in your life of so many amazing people that don't fall into any kind of binary at all.
Yeah.
I date women 99% of the time.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that I haven't fallen in love with a man. That's sure. that's totally not what that means.
Mm-hmm.
But, when I was probably 15, I was talking to my dad about how I wanted something. I don't remember what it was. And I was in high school and, you know, I was a really good student. And my dad just looked at me one day with this weird look and goes, I think there's somewhere we got to go.
Uh-huh.
And I lived 45 minutes from Portland.
Okay.
My dad drove me to Portland. We went doing some stuff that he had to do. And then he took me by this place called the City Nightclub. And he knew the owner of the City Nightclub, which was the all age or slash underage premier gay nightclub in Portland.
Ah,
and
okay.
he introduced me to him, and he says, I want you to know my daughter's probably going to be coming here. And I looked at him, and he goes, because this is where I know you need to go.
Wow.
And my dad gave me money, and he said, as long as I had it a ride home and a ride to there with somebody that he knew that was safe, that I was allowed to go. And I remember walking in there at 15 for the first time into this all-age queer space with hundreds.
Wow.
Hundreds
what,
of
what
people.
Year is this? What year is this?
1995. Okay. 1994, 95.
Yeah. Okay.
And thinking, this is the most amazing place I've ever been to in my life. I went home and I said, Dad, and he goes, see, I knew you needed to be there.
That's amazing.
He goes, because I know that you're not straight. I know it. Because I tried to have a boyfriend before and it didn't work. Not very well. I love him to pieces. I mean, you know, he was a super sweet person and very important to me. Mm-hmm. And I dated a man or two after that, but my dad sent me to a place where he knew I could meet other people like me, other girls my age like me, because where I grew up, which is north of here, I grew up in Longview, Washington, Kelso, Washington. When I was in high school, I was the only, I think there was a boy at another school who everybody knew was gay.
Okay.
I was the only girl I knew.
And that was
my, when I started high school, my freshman year, I was, everybody knew. Everybody knew that I went to a nightclub in Portland. Everybody knew that I you know, I was one of those dykes, you know, and I was to stay away from and whatever. And by the time I graduated high school, I'd slept with 90% of the squad. I brought them to Portland, took them dancing, and they're like, oh my gosh, I might be gay. You know, some of them ended up being gay, which is hilarious.
Yeah, that's wonderful. You gave them a friendly way to discover themselves.
It was going to that place was so magical, and I was like, wow, I just stepped into another world. It was like studio, like videos, if you see a studio, it was like that, but it was full of teenagers.
Wow. Yeah.
So there was a light up dance floor, and there was disco balls from the ceiling. And
what?
There was beautiful drag queens that performed on stage every night at midnight. And back then, I wasn't like a club, you know, kid that wore out crazy outfits because I was from a small town, but I was a gothic girl.
Yeah, right.
That wore fishnet stockings and knee-high boots and wore black lipstick and, you know, went there. And they also had an upstairs area called The Other Side that was gothic industrial music.
Oh,
and
wow.
So you got to sit there in the dark with there's like a checkered floor and mirrors all around. And they played music that you couldn't hear anywhere else.
Yeah.
Oh, at all. Okay. Unless you like had some music knowledge. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No radio station that I, you know, I was lucky if I got to tune into a Portland station to try to hear different type of music. And thank God my dad and my mom listened to like a plethora of music. Okay. So like, you know, I heard Judas Priest when I was like 5 years old. Kind of thing.
Right.
So,
wow.
They exposed me to every kind of music out there. And that place, being a goth kid, I walked in there and I'm like, this is like, it was the most freeing and relaxing place I'd ever been.
You found home.
Oh, I did. Oh, and I loved it. I pushed every single weekend because they were open Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday night until 4 a.m.
What?
And the reason they were open for kids until 4 is to make sure that they could go and get on a train and go home and not be harassed.
Yeah.
So they made sure that they could get there.
Mm-hmm.
So they opened at like 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
And they stayed open until 4 a.m. And so I literally tried to get as many people to go with me as possible. So I could go.
Yeah.
Because after coming home, I'm like, I don't want to be here because I realized that I lived in a very homophobic area with lots of people being awful to me.
And the only
place I could go where I didn't have to deal with that was there.
No, I see. So yeah. I can certainly understand that. Like I had mentioned earlier that we had a similar bar or club where I was growing up. It was called The Annex. And it was an underage gay club affiliated with a 21-year-old bar. But it offered areas to be yourself and to explore that really wasn't available anywhere else in the community where I lived. And I've met a number of friends there. But it also had like a punk rock scene. So it was also where you went to listen to punk bands play, you know, and where I bought my poppers. But it was just, you know, it was an interesting place to have for when you were under 21 and didn't have a community.
I mean, I just got filmed for, there's a man named Damon Browning who is actually making a documentary about the City Nightclub.
Okay.
And the progression of the name changes, the location changes, and when the owners finally changed, because one man owned it for like I think 30 years.
Wow. Yeah.
I was just interviewed for that because they had footage, and like the City Night Club was on MTV. Mm. MTV did like a thing about them, about how they were fighting City Hall, trying to keep themselves open. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because, oh my gosh, you know, all the scary things that must be happening there.
Gosh, the kids.
Look at those poor children.
they would have religious
protesters outside. God's got to save you at midnight.
Yeah.
And the religious protesters never got in trouble for harassing like 17, 18-year-old kids.
Of course, no.
You know, yeah. So, I mean, why would they do that? Portland in the 90s, why would they do that? But, I mean, they had protests.
Why do they do it now?
Right. They had protests, and they were featured on MTV. So Damian Browning is right now, and I think post-production editing, he interviewed over 60-plus people.
Really? Great.
Thousands of hours of film footage and photos, and he got a grant from the RAC grant this year in Portland for self-film, because it's one of those things that if somebody doesn't try to film it and try to talk about it and whatever, it's going to get lost.
Okay.
And it totally is.
Yeah.
The history of that place, because it was really important. It spawned a lot of things. This year is the 50th anniversary of the Rose Bunthorne pageant that was started at the City Nightclub.
Oh, wow.
So
okay. Yeah,
most people, for example, know Poison Water. She is well known in Portland as one of the top premier drag queens. She runs 90% of the shows at Darcelle's.
Uh-huh.
She was a Rosebud. A lot of important people, Jinx Monsoon, who is well known across the world, was a former Rosebud.
That's fantastic. Yeah.
So it's one of those things that we just got. The filming ended last year, so it's in post-production editing right now. Hopefully it's going to be put out by the end of this year, maybe the beginning of next year.
I hope so. Yeah, I'll definitely have to circle back, because I would love to learn more about that when it does get released.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be great. Some of the footage they found is just crazy.
I bet. That's
so
yeah.
crazy.
Right?
Which is great.
Yeah, yeah. When did you, I mean, I know that you mentioned performing as a different gender, or at least in the clothing you were wearing at a powwow. When did you start performing drag on stage?
So when I started coming to the City Night Club, it was probably 1995.
Mm-hmm.
And then the nightclub do two things with the city.
Yeah.
And the police department,
of course,
will be in the documentary. And it's common knowledge. You can look it up. There's like another small documentary that was made about it. They changed buildings. So they moved from the 1313 location in downtown Portland to the 333 location, which is off of Southwest Park, which is now, I don't know what it is. I haven't been by there in a while. Same owner. And I end up, you know, since changed buildings, we're still going to the same place. You know, people, same music, same dance club, same DJ. And I met a group of people who performed with a group called the Freaks of Nature, which back then, now it's cool. Like they have Dragula and they have, you know, horror and alt drag performers who perform alternative versions of music, not top 40, not popular music,
classic drag
or anything, or, you know, none of that stuff. I met these people who were part of a performing group who did crazy 45-minute shows, and I'm like, I want to do that. And so I ended up being incorporated into performing with them, and then that's when I met my drag mother, who is they were a drag queen who had been a part of the community for a long time.
Yeah.
And they are like, you know what? They adopted me, and I didn't even get to pick my female first name. We sat in the Roxy in downtown Portland, and a bunch of us were sitting there like, let's try, and they started throwing out names out there, and I'm like, what are doing? And somebody goes, no, Valencia, not spelled like the oranges, but spelled differently. And I'm like, I kind of like that. So it stuck. So I ended up hooking up with them, and I started performing. And then I ran for Miss Leather against another girl, which at that time would be considered a more female dominant title holder.
Okay.
Or a lesbian title.
Yeah.
And it was for an under 21 crowd, because there is the leather community for over 21. I ended up winning.
Ah.
I was one of the first alternate performers who went against somebody who was very popular in this scene back then.
Mm-hmm.
And I beat her like she had like 2 votes. And it was a public voted upon thing. So people actually put in ballots of who was the better performer.
Oh, not the digital way that sometimes we do it now.
So paper ballots.
Yeah.
And I was voted as the winner. And so I reigned for a whole year. I did fundraisers as an under 21 performer. I raised money for Cascade AIDS Project, and I raised money for all sorts of different things during my reign. It coincided with Rose Bunthorne, who ended up being my drag sister. She won that year too, so we reigned together.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's when I started performing. I kind of got into that, and I performed as Valencia for 10 years off and on.
Yeah.
And then I took a hiatus.
Okay.
Because I also at the time ended up helping manage there. So I helped promote the shows, help, you know.
Learning a different side of the business.
So yeah. I helped run lighting. I helped run and manage the bar. So I did all sorts of stuff, and I just needed a break to have like normal life. I've been performing and all that stuff for so long. So, and then when I came back this time, I've been doing Marquee for, I just had my 2-year dragversary. So,
Okay, for Marquee.
Yeah.
And you're running for a pageant now.
I am. Marquee. I'm running for Mr. Sweetheart 38.
You've been listening to The Samantha Page Show here on KXRW 99.9 FM. I'm your host, Samantha Page, and I'm talking with two-spirited drag performer Marquee de Sade. When we come back after these messages, we'll discuss a little bit about the pageant process and what the pageants entail. I hope you'll come back.
Can y'all just leave me be? My existence is not for your curiosity.
Support for KXRW comes from Kindred Vancouver in the Uptown Village neighborhood. Kindred is a community-focused general store offering bulk refillery options and supplies for sustainable, do-it-yourself living. With a focus on reducing waste and supporting clean, mindful lifestyles, Kindred helps individuals incorporate low-impact choices into daily life. More information is at kindredvancouver.com.
Welcome back to the Samantha Page Show here on KXRW 99.9 FM. I'm your host, Samantha Page. It's a pleasure to have you here. In this next half hour, we will finish up our interview with two-spirit drag performer Marquee de Sade, also known as Sasha. And so I hope you enjoy.
Ocean flow like make waves. Trans people, we need the payday. My people, yeah, we need the mayday. Why are you so quick to judge us? Shows a family.
Explain to us what a pageant involves and what it is.
Okay, so Sweethearts, what I'm doing is the Sweethearts are it's a nonprofit title, what
okay.
I'm running for.
Yeah.
So the Sweethearts are a nonprofit who their whole soul being and purpose is to help raise money and awareness of other nonprofits.
Mm-hmm.
So nonprofits that, you know, might need more help than some others, because there's so many nonprofits out there that don't get like the airtime
publicity or
anything that they need help. They might not get big donations from people. They might not get that, you know, oh, look at them. Oh, I didn't know they existed. Oh my gosh, I didn't know I could donate to them.
Yeah.
So that's what their sole purpose is. So you, if you win the title, then all year long, your whole entire goal is working for community. All
right.
You do is do fundraisers.
Yeah,
that is all
exactly.
You do.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And there's three of us running. It's me. I'm running for Mr. Nashville Hot is running for Miss, and Rosita C. Bennington is running for Mix.
Uh-huh. What is Mix?
Mix is that weird kind of gender in between both, not neither male, not neither female.
Okay.
It covers a lot of ground, non-binary, gender fluid people.
Sure.
Because everybody needs to be included. So if you don't quite feel
love
like a
that.
Mr. or quite feel like a Miss, then they have a space for you too. Yeah.
Perfect. Wonderful. And each of those category winners are crowned. And then you spend the next year doing charity work, essentially, to raise money for nonprofits
exactly
and awareness.
What it is.
Okay. And then, I mean, it's an honor, first of all, to win. You know, and it's an honor to do that charity work, I imagine.
Yeah.
You also belong to another organization.
Oh, no, that's who we're raising money for.
Oh, so tell us that.
So we are raising money for NAYA, which is the Native American Youth Association. And they are a group that help with food support, and they help with housing support, and they help with elder services, and they help with teaching and reclaiming cultural history and things that have been lost through generational trauma for Indigenous peoples.
Huh.
They cater to, they have in the Portland Public School District, I know in Park Rose, that they have kids that are taught about domestic violence situations so they can do peer-on-peer counseling. Because in the reality of things in the world, Native women especially are 90, I think it's 90, maybe 70% more likely to be a victim of domestic violence or kidnapping or death by another person, higher than any other statistic in the United States. And that's scary. So they teach, you know, signs of awareness of what to look for and how to help people and who to report to. And they also have a school. So they do community outreach. They do community events. They house a special section of the population that is very underfunded and not much attention is brought to at all.
Yeah.
Anything native service wise is a fight.
Yeah. And these are services that are offered to the native community as a whole. Is. It's not specifically queer.
You can reach out to them through school. No. And they are one of the places that, you know, they have a queer prom. They have a queer two-spirit prom. They have a queer two-spirit powwow.
Wait a minute. This organization?
Yes.
Oh, no kidding. Yes. That's wonderful. Yeah.
And they are kind of like a sister company to NARA, which is the Native American Rehab Association. So there's a couple of Native services, community-wide services that all kind of band together because their expertise crosses over into other nonprofits. They help one another out.
Makes sense.
Or they're people that are in one or in a part of other ones because that's just the way that things work for the Native community here is huge, but it's very small for being big.
Really?
Like, oh yeah, if you know one person, you know that person who knows that person because, you know, Natives consider each other family.
Yeah, and that's beautiful. Yeah.
And so like, oh, you know so-and-so. Oh yeah, I've known them my whole life. Oh, okay, then you're so-and-so. And so they know you by proxy. So like I have a friend that I've had since I met her when I was 14, I think. And I met her at the Delta Park powwow when I was princess. I was Indian princess for a powwow in Kelso.
Uh-huh.
And we've been friends since then. She calls me her other sister. I've been friends with her since meeting her at a powwow because family is family. So
that's fantastic.
Yeah. So the Native community is like that. So you know one person who knows another person who knows another person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's who we're raising money for.
So for the Sweethearts pageant.
We are strictly raising money for NAIA this year. All the donations go to the Sweethearts.
Yeah.
And then the Sweethearts
distribute the
money to the recipient.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to link to the donation page.
So the Sweethearts right now, you can do it online through their Venmo, or you can do it through the actual website, www.sweetheartsofportland.org.
Uh-huh.
And you go to the menu and you click on it and you hit a button called candidates because that's what I am. I'm a candidate.
Right. Yeah.
And then there's a form you can fill out and you can put how much you want to donate to either me. If you don't want to donate to me, you can donate to National Rosita to whoever you want to donate to. And you also,
and then how it works is sort of like the initial raise of money that you have to do is like a, I don't want to say buy-in because that's sort of,
no, it's a minimum requirement.
It shows you're dedicated.
Yeah, it does. And the goal is to, like, my goal is the next 2 weeks to raise as much money as I physically can.
That, yeah,
because NAIA is so underfunded, I think.
That's right.
And they need it. I mean, they have an operational kitchen. They cater to school children. You know, they do fundraisers every year. They do even outdoor school stuff, which is amazing.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So they, you know,
you mentioned that they, if you wanted to learn how to buy a house, they could teach you.
Oh, they do all sorts of classes. Like they have house buying classes. They have future planning classes. They have, you can donate time to take kids to do like outdoor school. I mean, there is tons of stuff that you could do through them. If you're indigenous, which is amazing, they should get way more funding than they do.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, look at the timeline that we're in. So.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Worst timeline. you mentioned another story about taking a companion or a friend to a powwow.
Oh, so my drag sister, Phoenix Desaud.
Mm-hmm. And we'll hear all about that story when we come back after these messages. You are listening to The Samantha Page Show here on KXRW 99.9 FM, and I am your host, Samantha Page.
The Columbian in Southwest Washington continues to offer the most comprehensive and consistent coverage of our region and our people, despite the challenges faced by local newspapers nationwide. Valued donations to our community-funded journalism project pays for reporters to provide expanded and in-depth coverage of key local issues in print and online, including housing, transportation, and the environment. For the most thorough daily coverage, visit Columbian.com. Please consider donating or subscribing today.
Welcome back to the Samantha Page Show. I'm your host, Samantha Page, here on KXRW 99.9 FM, Vancouver, Washington. And now we'll return to the ending of my interview of Marquita Saad, a two-spirit drag performer here in the Vancouver-Portland area.
She passed away this last year. She lost a battle with cancer. It's actually her one-year memorial is coming up. And she was two-spirit as well.
Yeah.
One of the most amazing things I think I've ever seen in my life is I took her and put her in drag, and daytime drag. which okay. is what we used to call it, daytime drag. She looked pretty as a girl during the daytime, not in nightclub setting, not nightclub lighting.
Right.
She was just gorgeous. And I took her and put her in drag, and she was so scared to go and dance because she thought that people would look at her like less than.
At the powwow?
She at was a powwow.
Okay.
And this is like her test run of the whole entire people realizing that this is who she was.
Yeah. She knew these people.
She knew these people.
Yeah.
She, or they knew her family.
Uh-huh.
And her walking out and dancing and people throwing money at her feet.
Oh, yeah.
And it was beautiful. She's like trying not to cry, and she's got this big, huge smile on her face. And her just looking gorgeous and realizing that these people didn't care that she was queer.
No.
They did not care that they'd known her like their whole life. They did not know she did drag. They didn't know she did drag.
Okay.
So this was her step into, this is what I do. This is who I'm queer.
Yeah. Yeah.
I cross dress.
And now, you had mentioned her family had already sort of disowned her.
They hadn't disowned her. They just, it was an acknowledgement of that's what they did.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't find out, a lot of them, until later.
Okay.
But like they would sneak out to go clubbing at a young age. They
done
would
that.
Take,
yeah.
They would take out. They'd sneak out. I don't know if his family knows that. They would sneak out to go clubbing, and they would walk from Gresham to downtown Portland.
Oh my gosh.
That's how determined that they were
to get there. Yeah.
To get there.
Do you have any siblings?
I do.
Okay.
I have a younger brother. He's 4 years younger than me.
Uh huh.
Everybody, I've had people ask me why I do my makeup or why I look like the way I do in drag.
Yeah.
Because I look like a cross of my brother, and my dad, and my nephew.
Oh, really? No kidding.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. That's fantastic.
When I have no hair,
yeah.
I mean, I look like a female version, but my brother's way taller too. But my brother's, that's where I pattern a lot of what I look like.
Okay.
If I try to look normal-ish.
Uh-huh. Okay.
1,000%.
Well, yeah.
So I'm like, might as well you try to use that. And so
how does one develop a drag persona?
So the people that I was around when I first started performing, here's an example of me doing my female drag, is since I was a goth kid, I used a lot of the early 80s goth influence and the things I wore, like vinyl and rubber and latex and stuff, and the big billowy wedding dresses, very Susie Sue, you know, Nina Hagen-ish. My drag mother was obsessed with Diamond Gloss, who is a gothic opera singer. I love her. She's amazing.
I've never heard. I'll check it out.
Oh, my Lord. She's got... some of the most, her voice is chilling.
Hmm.
She plays piano, and she has such an amazing range that she sings like notes that don't make any sense. Like it's very eerie, very captivating. My mother was obsessed with her and my drag mother. And so like she would theme whole drag shows after the artist. So people didn't know so they're being exposed to like gothic opera and very shrill sometimes music.
Yeah.
And they're just like, and she also wrote poetry.
Uh-huh.
So my female persona came from a lot of that.
Okay.
Now, when I did do drag as a king prior, I patterned myself after, you know, men that I knew. A lot of the drag kings now, the difference between like doing drag then and doing drag now is the evolution of things that were available. So like silicone breastplates, not available. Some of the makeup that they have now, not available.
Yeah.
Some of the things that people, because I didn't grow up seeing drag kings. They weren't labeled as a drag king. They're women impersonating men, or you know butch lesbians being butch lesbians. It also came up before the whole trans woman or trans woman or trans man, that whole the term
terminology
trans,
yeah,
wasn't really for Portland. I mean, there were a few performers that you knew were that, but you didn't, they were just women,
yeah,
or they were just men. They didn't put the trans in the front. They that's just who they were. They were women.
You made a distinction I like between impersonation and sort of living it. A female impersonator takes the makeup off and But a trans person may not necessarily take the makeup off.
Yeah, I mean, there were a few people that performed and that you knew she was just a woman. She was just a woman.
Okay.
One person that sticks out in my brain was Pebbles Campbell Starr. She just recently passed away. She was one of the first, I guess, trans women I ever met. I saw her perform when I was like 17. Gorgeous woman.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
Right.
Absolutely gorgeous. I didn't know that she would be classified as a trans woman. She was just a beautiful woman who did drag. And and I'm like, oh, look, that she's an AFAB drag queen. I said that to her once. And she goes, oh, my God, that's so sweet. Because she was so like somebody who didn't know her recognized her as that. Mm-hmm. But to me, she was just a woman.
Did you know the term two-spirit before you knew the term trans?
That's more of a colonial, like a newer term as well.
Yeah.
It was coined quite recently. I don't know.
1980s, I think. Yeah, right.
Two-spirit is a term that has been I more recently used. Once I read about or heard about it, or people have called me that before I knew what it was, I'm like, oh my gosh, it totally makes sense to me.
No.
Because it's also somebody who is culturally or in the whole medicine realm or has studied that or holds cultural heritage and teaches people. I danced. I did competition dancing, and I danced for 5-6 years solid, three different types of Native dance, including men's dancing. I was part of a drum group. I've taught people how to make hand drums and do art and do beading, and I make moccasins for people. And so I still have some things that are culturally important to me that I've taught other people how to do.
Yeah.
My mom ran an encampment for 5 years for other Natives to come teach kids how to drum. They also had like an arts fair, and that was in Amboy, Washington. My mom ran a powwow for 5 years, would bring drums, competition dancers. I mean, the whole thing, to share that part of something with a community like Kelso, who wouldn't have had that
opportunity.
Yeah. Right. I mean, Portland's a bigger city. Portland State University has powwows all the time. Mm-hmm. Other places, Chemeketa has them. Some of the residential places for Nara and Nea have powwows.
Of course, yeah.
So, and there's powwows all over. You could go to a powwow in the state of Oregon literally every single weekend somewhere. Like I was telling you on our way here, my family, my grandfather, my mother was adopted. She came out of the whole, there's been lots of scandals with Native women and Native families throughout history. It's very well-known and documented. And most people don't have the history or the knowledge of it even being there, but if you look, you can find it.
It's there. You've been listening to the Samantha Page Show here on KXRW 99.9 FM, Vancouver, Washington. I'm talking with Marquita Sott, a two-spirited Portland area drag performer, and we will return to our conversation right after this message.
KXRW is supported by The Columbian, which provides coverage of environmental, transportation, and housing issues of vital interest to the region and is made possible through its community-funded journalism project. Available at Columbian.com.
And you're back to the Samantha Page Show here on KXRW. We'll be finishing up our interview with Marquita Sott right now.
There was a whole thing of like kidnapping Native babies, people's children being taken from them, and like what's happening now, and put in residential schools, and them pretty much whitewashing a whole nation of people
and the culture of
make them more Christian or more acceptable, or you can't speak that language, or you can't eat that food, or you know,
to civilize you,
because quote unquote, this is from my aunt, Natives are savages because they don't accept Christ, and that came from my aunt.
And she's Native.
And she's Native. So my grandfather, their whole existence, he was born in 1903. They were whitewashed. His family, his parents, had been whitewashed out of their nativeness, because if you're Native, you could be hunted down and killed. You could be forced onto a reservation because that's where savages and people like that need to live.
That's how dehumanization works, regardless of who it's pointed at. 1,000%.
Lots of people, Native tribes get money from gambling. No. Some tribes get money from gambling. But yeah, so I think that because of the colonization, how far it might have gone, because a lot of Natives ran towards the West Coast and tried to hide. They made stands here. I think that's why it's not as affluent here, that people that are here kind of saw what happened that direction, how many people were massacred. I mean,
they knew better by the point.
They knew a little bit better, maybe. Mm-hmm. And maybe a lot more of indigenous people ended up landing here. They might not have went back to where they were from, because trying to go do that was too hard, and they stayed. So trying to fight for some equality here, I think has been a big deal. And also, I think because the West Coast, a lot more tribes weren't as affluently affected by the colonialism as versus the East, that was like decimated.
Okay.
So they already had that whole we're standing our ground thing, because there's nowhere to go.
Yeah.
I mean, they can't go. It's the ocean next. There's the ocean. They can't go any further.
Yeah. That's unfortunately, unfortunately true. What's the Native community need? What, you know, especially the Two-Spirit community or within the Native community? Money, resources, attention? What does it need?
I think that depending on who you are, I think that a lot of the Native community, especially women are the Native women, the Native female community is probably one of the most...
Yeah, high risk.
Likely
yeah.
to mm-hmm. be victim of domestic violence or kidnapping or yes. sexual assault
mm-hmm. yes.
Out of any demographic in the United States. Missing and murdered indigenous women and people. And now it's included people because trans people and queer people are being now native mm-hmm. and are being taken just as high as women. And it's not necessarily from other indigenous people. I would say I would try not to get political about it, but doing drag and being queer in the scene is political, period.
Yeah, right.
So
existence is resistance.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. the acts that I do as a drag king is I do predominantly indigenous informational acts. I do it every single year on purpose.
Yeah.
So people are made aware. I have a missing and murdered indigenous women act that I do, which actually I sing live. And it's a well-known song for missing. It's like an anthem. I show pictures of people that have been missing for at least 2 years from all over the United States. I actually put up photos.
Yeah.
So people know. And then one of the last photos I put up, I do, and every year that I do it, I add new photos. It's people that are just missing from here, from the Pacific Northwest.
Oh my gosh, really?
Somebody still recognizes them. Trump removed. Mm-hmm. There was a committee that was put together to actually try to find and help locate missing and murdered indigenous women and people. Trump removed that program. And it's not just in the United States. Canada has a whole highway that women have gone missing on there. Yeah. Thousands of women.
Okay.
And one of the other acts that I do is an anti-Trump act. And it's,
don't tell me, really?
no DAPL, the Dakota Access Pipeline.
Yeah.
I had family members that were there protesting. My sister took resources there, drove them to North Dakota to the area that was privately owned by a woman. Mm-hmm. It was privately owned by a woman. And they were trying to put a pipeline through her property, which housed buffalo.
Yeah.
Which, whatever. And we, as a Native Indigenous community, people from all over the United States, including we had people that came from Hawaii. We had people that came from Somalia. We had people that came from, they were Maori.
Yeah.
Because Indigenous First Nations people help other Indigenous First Nation people.
Okay. So this affects Native women and children
yeah.
it's
across terrible.
The board.
And now,
this
and
is
now
one
it's starting
area
to affect
the
gay kids are coming up. Male and female. Yeah.
Okay.
So I think now it's beyond the whole entire people say, oh, well, you know, sexuality, this, sexuality, that. If you're just choosing random people and it's not specific, then it's not about sexuality at all.
No, you're right. It's just targets then. It's
Just primarily.
Just viciousness and cruelty. Yeah.
It is. But if you look at it, in my opinion, if we as, because we're a minority.
Yes.
Like I'm a two-spirit indigenous white presenting drag king or drag performer in Portland.
The trifecta.
That's a whole bunch of minority.
Right.
You know what I mean? If you took all brown people and all black people and all anything of any ethnicity that is different. But if you took everybody who's a minority, women, disabled people, people that have disability, I mean, any kind of disability, I think that'd probably be like 70% of the United States. But they are.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they could that could be a huge change.
Finding commonality is so difficult, but it's not really. We,
no,
we all
are
have
not that no, we, much mm-hmm. different from another. They just don't want. I think it is because people fight so hard for their individuality that once they get it, they don't want to realize that there are other people like them.
The, who want to be individuals themselves,
but,
too.
Right.
Right.
And
yeah,
you
their
can
own
be
way.
An individual, but community, if you are similar, that's community. That's somebody that you can, you know, relate to and be helpful to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even if it's something small.
No, I agree. I agree. That's, No, I appreciate that. Where do you regularly perform?
Okay. So last night I host a show every third Friday, actually a party, every third Friday at CC Slaughter's from 9 o'clock until we go until 2 a.m.
What's CC Slaughter's first?
CC Slaughter's is a gay owned establishment in downtown Portland that has two sections. They have the Rainbow Room and the regular dance floor. The Rainbow Room is more like a lounge. They have the Queen's Key. So they have like a piano bar.
Oh, wow.
It's very soft and, you know, relaxing. And then they have
cool
the other
jazz.
Part. Yeah. They have the other side who they have drag shows and it's a dance club. So I hosted a party there last night called Fluid, a gender.
I got to write that down.
Okay, you got to write that down.
I got to edit that out. Sorry.
So
a gender F-wordery.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because gender is a construct.
Yeah.
So we deal with drag kings, drag things, drag cryptids and drag creatures and non-binary, gender fluid, androgynous, or someone who doesn't believe in a gender. I asked a performer once, I said, where do you find yourself on the spectrum of performance stuff, and they're like, mm-hmm. I'm an alien supermodel.
Wow.
And I'm going to say that, and everybody on the planet's going to know who I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Cool. That's what you recognize as? Well, then you fit in our party. So yeah. we are open to anyone. We want our space to feel comfortable to everybody, because I think it's important to be able to go somewhere, relax, and be able to dance where you feel safe. And so we have a show at 10 o'clock, because I want everybody to know you can just come to my show, but there are multiple shows that you can go to support
something
drag kings or drag things or, you know, something else. So I do that every third Friday. I also host Andromeda, which is a live singing, lip singing competition in Northeast Portland at the Escape Barn Grill the second Saturday.
Know it well.
Yeah. So you can either live sing or lip sync. It's a place for people to try new acts. It's a place for newcomers to actually, I take lots of new performers so they get used to the whole entire turning music in on time, turning promo photos in on time, so they can expand their drag career. That's the goal.
Do you host the Rising Star with Rosita?
I do. I host Lucky Star every
Lucky
Sunday
Star, that's right. Yes.
From 8 to 10 now, and that's an open call drag show.
Right. That's where you
turn in music and you show up and you
just
perform.
If you've never done it before.
Yeah, I can actually announce this now. So the first Saturday in April, I will be hosting my first all Indigenous Indigiqueer event.
Wow,
at Slaughter's.
That's fantastic.
It's going to be, I think I'm going to call it Snag, which is a whole joke.
Okay.
All the entertainment is going to be Indigenous First Nation people, whether it be drag, burlesque, live singing, poetry, whatever.
Wow.
If you've got
that
talent,
sounds wonderful.
We have some a person who's going to be coming doing circus. We are going to be raising funds every single month for a new Native nonprofit in the Pacific Northwest area somewhere.
Okay.
So that is going to be the first Saturday in April, and the doors will be at 8 o'clock.
Wow.
So
here's what how can people follow you on social media so that they can be aware of, like,
you
do you
can
have
go to
links?
My, yeah, yeah, I have Instagram. You can go to that at it's at @the_de_sade.
Okay. And I'll link to it in the one this show goes out.
Yeah, you can find me on there. I post all the shows that I have and performance videos from other stuff that I do, because I perform year round. Like, I have another big show coming up. I'm with Willy Wank Me in April, called Community King. And he has somebody who is on King of Drag, which is like RuPaul's Drag Race for drag kings.
Yeah. Has that helped the community?
Has for visibility. I think that it sparked a big thing of like, oh my gosh, amazing enough, drag kings can do what drag queens do.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can. they have Pressure K coming. He is Atlanta, Georgia, is one of their premier black drag king performers from there. He is amazing.
Yeah, I bet.
I just recently performed with King Molasses at Badlands, who was also the winner of King of Drag.
Yeah.
They are amazing. Tuna Melt came here last year, and I got to meet them, and they're amazing. So far we've had three people from King of Drag grace Portland. But yeah, that's going to be a community event. So it's actually a resource fair. So there's going to be resources. It's going to be held at the Marie Equi Center.
Yes, wonderful place.
Willy Wank Me is amazing. They work there. And Pressure K is going to be coming, so that's going to be amazing. It's going to be from 2 to 4.
Okay.
So
yeah. Okay. All of this sounds wonderful. I'm glad that you're doing it. Like I said, I'll link to that along with also the sweetheart pageant link for those who are interested in, you know, following up or possibly donating to what's available. I really want to thank you so much for spending your morning with me. I know you were out very late last night.
I was. Our event last night ended it. I got home at like 2:33.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm like, oh, I got to get up in the morning. My fiance literally hit the alarm button, rolled over, pushed me, and then he went back to sleep.
Oh,
and I'm like, okay.
Right? Okay. But I really do appreciate you spending time with me today and just talking with me and explaining what your life is like and what your lived experience is like. And I really appreciate
it. I mean, her name was Samantha.